Hello and welcome to this episode of the Resilient Farmer podcast. Farming is one of the oldest jobs in the world, and despite its evolution over thousands of years, there is no question that it remains one of the most important. Farming in England is changing again because of Brexit, climate change, and other global challenges. This podcast explores how to prepare for the future of farming and how to become resilient to changes in your finances, the environment, and your personal life. My name is Manuela de Mendonca, and on the Resilient Farmer podcast this week, I will be speaking to Heather Copley from Farmer Copleys about their experience of diversifying and expanding their business. So, Heather, thank you very much for being here. Do you want to just introduce yourself and tell everyone a bit about you?
Yeah, so my name's Heather Copley. Most people sort of say they're the CEO or the managing director. My title is Queen Bee of Farmer Copleys. If you ever see an email, it always says Queen Bee on it. I run this business with my husband, Robert. We've got a team of about 80 now. My background isn't retail. My background is an agronomist. That's what I used to do, advising farmers on looking after their crops and doing all their IACS payments, as was then, et cetera, et cetera. And we decided to set up Farmer Copley's farm shop. So Robert now the business has been going 20 years this December. Robert works more on the financial side, whereas I do much more of the day-to-day running, the marketing, the finesse of the business, what we're going to be doing, etc. So I'm sort of a bit more probably the visionary within the business and the planner and the person that gets stuff done.
How did that process start off then, if we go back in time 20 years or so? What was the thought process behind getting to where you are now?
So Robert was a farm advisor with dairy cows and AIing the cows, and then went on to the feeding of cows. I did the agronomy in Dorset, and then we both moved to Cheshire and did exactly the same jobs there. And then we decided, or Robert decided, that we ought to have children, which I wasn't adverse to, but I wasn't that bothered about either. I didn't think it would happen. So then we fell pregnant. Although Robert always says I fell pregnant, I'm sure he had something to do with it. So we fell pregnant with Jacob, our eldest, and we decided that we'd want to bring them up on the farm. So a bit more of a serious edge. We were out on farm, both of us, dealing with farmers every day of the week, and we were struggling to find traceable, good quality food that we could eat and cook in our own house. We could get half a cow, we could get a full pig, we could get a lamb or whatever butchered to eat in the freezer, but actually we didn't want to do that. So the concept really came from, well, if we don't want that and we're dealing with all these farmers every day, how on earth are Joe Public going to get on? Because they're definitely not going to be in a position to access the farmers direct. So that's really where the concept came from. Then there was something called, let me remember, it was one of the first ever grants that came out. It must have been like the Rural Diversification Programme, some RDPE, that's what it was called. The RDPE programme came in. And we looked at doing corporate events. We looked at doing like the paintballing, which didn't rock our boat. We looked at doing the children's soft play on farm, which a lot of people were doing. But again, it didn't really spark our interest. But we are massively into our food and we're massively into farming and agriculture and celebrating and communicating how ace we think brilliant and professional the British agriculture is. So that's really what sparked our interest. We applied for the grant, which a lot of people said was really, really hard work, which I would say it was hard work, but very valid hard work, because we would have made an awful lot more mistakes had we not actually gone through that process. So I did that whilst I was actually pregnant with Jacob, which gave me something to focus on. And I'm not really good at the whole baby thing. I like to keep my brain going, and I was never good at talking about baby stuff. So that was really good for me personally. And then we got the grant 50%. So we set a tiny little farm shop up. It was literally three stables, horse stables worth. And it's just grown and grown and grown. We've had five big phases of development since then to now where we are today with our 80 team members. that we employ. Our roles, as you can imagine, literally from concept, where Robert was working for Thompson's of York and I was running the farm shop and set the farm shop up and project managing all that stuff. Then I'm literally in my chef's whites serving and baking pies, to now where I'm very office based, although I do love getting out on the farm. And we've had to divvy up all the different jobs and work out our structure. And we've got a lot of people that are a lot better at stuff than we are. And then we're focusing on what we're good at, which for me is the marketing, the merchandising, the vision, and what everything looks like and where to go. That's how it sort of came to where we are today.
80 people is a lot. That's a big hive to be in Queen Bee of.
We have a very flat management structure here now. We used to have your stereotypical hierarchical sort of pyramid type structure, which everybody in business said you needed. And everybody said you must do this and you need somebody to help you and you need a farm shop manager and you need to have a cafe manager, because we've got two separate buildings on site. COVID hit and we used it as a massive opportunity, if I'm being completely honest, to level out the management structure. And we've gone back to a flatline management structure with really good heads of department that want and enjoy, I think, working much more closely with Robert and myself, which is not diluting the message as much, as opposed to going through somebody else. It's something I would never go back to, that structure. So I've got some really good heads of departments. A lot of them have been homegrown. I know it's not the stereotypical farm shop structure that people have, but I think it works really well for us. I'm a big advocate of it. And maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but it seems to be doing the right thing.
And you still farm as well?
Yes, so we've changed the farm. When we started, the farm was very much based around meat, because obviously that's what Robert and I have been looking for as consumers. We had beef animals on the farm. The farm was originally a dairy farm, donkeys years ago, way, way, way before my time and before Robert had left, actually. Then basically the meat demand that we had with the farm shops, it expanded quite quickly, outstripped anything we could supply, because the farm's only 120 acres. So it's not a big farm, which is really the reason it needed to be diversified. Otherwise, the farm would have got sold to a neighbouring farmer or swallowed up by somebody else. So then we started probably about 2010, something around about there. We decided to take the experience out onto the farm. And with that, we started to get people to engage with fruit and pumpkins and vegetables and those sorts of products. And we found that was a really good avenue to communicate the field to fork story, rather than, oh, look at this lovely lamb, let's bottle feed the lamb. Then the lamb's in the butchery counter, which I'm all for communicating that to people. But the public struggle with that a little bit, and it's much easier for us to get them to engage with the strawberry, eat it, taste how amazing it is in season, and then do all the related strawberry stuff. Plus, with our footprint that we've got of land, we can get the footfall of people we want. And then we celebrate and communicate about the meat farmers that do supply us, that are all local. So we've almost become a bit of a cooperative for the other meat farmers. So they get a slightly higher price than they would do. We get the quality and we'll talk about them and celebrate them all day long. And we have TVs in store showing them and their animals, etc., and how they farm them. So we'll get up to, when we've got pumpkins on, we'll have 8,000 visitors a day through the site, which is
a lot.
Mad, but it works. That's our optimum. We did one day get up to 18,000 and there were queues back to the M62 both ways. And we were in terrible trouble with the local council. I'm there dressed as a witch. I'd spend the October dressed as this green witch, which is basically walking tourist information. I could feel it was getting out of control. It was horrendous. And I managed to work my way out to what was the car park, which is like on the cusp of a hill. And I could see the traffic backed up both roadways back to the M62. We had reports of people that were late to their weddings. I was literally nearly physically sick. We had to go and see the council, you can imagine. So we decided to ticket the event, which was our outcome that we wanted, and we control it. And 8,000 is our optimum. We're running at peak capacity with optimum customer service, lovely experience, etc. We'll do things like last weekend on strawberries. No, not last weekend because it was wet. The weekend before, we had 1,500 people a day through picking strawberries. It gives us a really good avenue to be able to communicate and showcase British and Yorkshire agriculture, which is what obviously we're all about.
It's really fantastic that you're doing that. And I'd really love to come and see exactly what it's like as an experience as a customer as well. Yeah. So you've done this as a husband and wife partnership. How do you think it's been different for the both of you? And what's your experience been like as a woman going through this process and driving a project as massive as this?
I think, first of all, we're quite lucky in that my personality and my skill set is the polar opposite to Robert's skill set. We don't have much conflict, so that works. We also, when we're at work, we are Robert and Heather. We're two work colleagues, and we always have been from the word go. We do not go to work as husband and wife. We go to work as Robert and Heather Copley, just happen to have the same surname. And because we have the quite different skill sets, it works. So, for instance, Robert went out years ago to Pennsylvania on a farm conference. And when he was out there, he saw a place called the Copper Kettle Village. And it was basically a jam place that was run by the Amish. So obviously he couldn't take any photos. And he was like, this is great. I love this. And I was like, well, it sounds interesting. So then we went back for a family holiday to Pennsylvania and lived with the Amish, which was fascinating, and saw the enterprise that they had. And it isn't till last year that we started building it, and we're opening it this week. So I saw what they'd done. Then I've looked at other elements. Robert said he'd like to do it. And now once we made the decision, then I take it forward and come up with the design, the building design, work with the builders, do the whole thing. It's not just because I'm a woman. I think it's because I'm creative and I've got that vision. So I can look at a plan and I can see it being built. And I'm sure there's other people that can do that as well. So I think it's more of a personality trait and a character trait personally. I don't know if you've ever looked at DISC. Have you ever looked at DISC? We use that a lot in our business, which is all about your personalities. I come up as a high D, which only a high D can be impressed that they're a high D. Everybody else finds a high D a complete pain in the neck. You've just got that drive. You don't want to accept failure. So it's that whole enthusiasm and that drive that brings it forward. I think I've got a very solution-orientated mind. Want to build that. This has come up as a problem. We can't do this. We can't do that. Right. How are we going to get it sorted? And then we'll sort it out. I think that's just part of my character as a person. But I do love what I do. I really, really enjoy my job. And I think that's key to everything. I think women are very good, though, at multitasking. I've got quite a few men that I won't be suggesting they listen to this that work for me. And I call it plate spinning. They're in management positions and they seem to struggle to be able to spin multiple plates. I've just done my Christmas orders today. I've got to sort out the hampers for another member of staff today to feed back on them. So I'm going from Christmas to hampers to this. I've got pumpkins going off. And then I've also got the opening of the jam kitchen. So I've got all these projects going off in my head. And then things are going on an annual basis. So we've always got the different streams going along. And I think women flourish in that environment a lot more because we're sort of built that way, because we have to deal with everything on a day-to-day basis, even if we're at home on the farm, feeding, washing, taking the kids to school, doing the stereotypical female elements. We are just built, I think, to genetically to be able to multitask. And I think that's a big strength in a business like this. It's got so many facets to it.
Are there any problems that you have run up against trying to do things as kind of a woman in this business, or any big challenges that you see women facing in farming today?
I think the challenges that women face in farming today are less than they were when I started in the industry, which is great to see. Obviously, I started as an agronomist, so that was harder because I remember doing my basis exam. You had to prove that you were so much more on it, maybe, than a male counterpart. Obviously, you had to pass regardless, but you had to be really, really good. But equally so, because I was a female in a male-dominated industry, I probably stood out a little bit more. So that was an actual plus, that there weren't many female agronomists at that point in time. So people might not remember your name, but they remember that girl that drove the TDI 90 truck cab Land Rover down to see them last week, and which company it was from. So I do think there were benefits there. adversity, I think, that I've had has been an awful lot more to do with being younger. When I was younger, I had people like my environmental health officers. We had some people that were really helpful, some people that maybe weren't quite so helpful. You know, we've been trying to push the boundaries on what we wanted to offer. Whereas now, I think I've got the courage of my convictions and I'll just say it. So I'm not sure whether that's just because I'm a woman that I do it, because I think Robert would do the same. So probably comes back down to that. I believe that women are as good as men. It's as simple as that. And I think my voice is as valid as anybody else's, although they can have a different opinion. I expect people to listen if it's in that scenario and deal with them. But we've had a lot of support as well because I've been a female, and women are obviously astute enough to be able to utilise that niche as well. You know, we're all quite savvy. So I'm not a burn the bra type person. I think we've all got a place, but it's all about quality as well.
And is there any advice that you'd give to women who are thinking about going down the same diversification process that you have?
It's more on an emotional level, because I think we do beat ourselves up. I know I beat myself up because I work ridiculous hours each week. Then I try to do everything, or I feel pressured to do everything from my children's viewpoint, from a wife viewpoint. A lot of it I don't do much on social media as Heather. I only go on social media as Farmer Copleys, which is probably good, because I probably feel even worse at seeing how amazing people present themselves, shall we say, as opposed to what's really going off. So I think as women, we do put a ridiculous amount of pressure on ourselves, and actually taking that bit of time out in whatever avenue you like it to be. I like to use the gym that I've set up on site. That's my thing. I like to go in there 3 or 4 times a week and just have that half an hour, 45 minutes to myself, doing whatever class it is with the TV. And that's just my thing. I've got lots of other things I want to do and I don't do them. But it's about allowing yourself the time, I think, to actually reward yourself. A few years ago, I went with a girlfriend who runs a solicitor's firm, and she has a really, you know, busy, busy time. And we decided to go to Peru. So we went to Peru on the Salcantay trek, and we took our 2 14-year-old boys, and it was absolutely amazing. But it was amazing because we went as two women, took the time out and allowed ourselves the time to do it and enjoy it. And the fact that we had no Wi-Fi was brilliant, because we were obviously living in the moment and so were the children. So I'd like to do more stuff like that. But I think we're all very good at making excuses that we're going to do it, and we're going to do it next year because we didn't get around to it this year. But actually, you need to take that time out and allow yourself the time to reflect on what you've done. That's something that I'm really bad at. I look at what we've built and other people will say how fab it is, but all I see is the negative bits, the bits that aren't right. And when I do actually look back, I had to write my note for Christmas today for the Christmas brochure, and I put down what we've done. Well, I've only got to July, and I was thinking, holy moly, we have done 3 of the pinnacle of my career bits we've managed to do, and we've not even hit August yet. So I think having a little bit of time to reflect is key to our sanity and to keeping us driving things forward.
And we talk a lot about the word resilience, especially in the context of this Future Farming Resilience Programme. Does that word have a particular meaning to you? Because I know it's a buzzword for a lot of people and it means different things to different people.
I think over the last few years, anybody that's still in business has been very resilient. But resilience to me is really, it's every day, and it's about overcoming adversity and being able to adapt and change a scenario. So for instance, yesterday we had a situation where we put the sunflower field in and then the weather came wrong and we couldn't put the pre-emergence on. So we've got a terrible weed problem. So one sort of like the first 2 weeks volume of them is not going to come to anything. So straight away we're having a meeting. What can we do? Can we link it in with the honeybee? So we're trying to adapt, and that's on a very small scale. But it's always about thinking outside the box. And I think it's about not accepting failure and being able to change something that's maybe not quite right into a positive, even though, and admitting that it's not right. So it's about finding those opportunities in adversity I also think you need to plan. I have a piece of work. It's a growth orbit. It's a circle. And it's like 3 years worth, always at a time planned. And the elements on it can vary, but it's got figures on it. It's bright and colourful, which works for me because I'm a very visual person. But that planning helps keep me on track all the time, but not as into what I need to do tomorrow, just on the bigger picture things and not letting things fall off. So I think that planning and being logical, you need to have that and somebody to hold you accountable. I have a business coach. I think a lot of people sometimes think they know everything, but Robert and I have always got business coaches and different people that help and support us and challenge us. We're members of the Farm Retail Association and NAFTMA and NAFAN and all of these, because sometimes we only speak to the other farm owners or people in our shoes once a year when we see them at conference, but we have our own sort of private Facebook groups and forums that we can speak to them. So I think farming can be very lonely, and it's very important to have those people that you can reach out to. And some of the ones we've got are on a global scale, but having that network there, and they're not just associates now, a lot of them have become friends, is absolutely key. So that's a resilience there. The coaches are great because they challenge us in all different bits. And I try now to fill in the gaps within our company on the elements, keep looking at the company, reevaluating what we need. I spend a lot of time with the staff on their resilience as well, because if they all fall to pieces, everybody else is going to fall to pieces. Work hard and play hard, I think. We do work very hard, but we also play exceptionally hard as well. So, and that makes it all feel worthwhile.
That's good. It sounds like you do play hard and you've managed to get to some really interesting places.
I have actually written down here drink Prosecco, but I didn't think
that would be. Maybe is that on the to-do list?
Advocating tea or Prosecco, one or the other.
And you mentioned business coaching as well. What kind of things do you look for in professional advice when you do get it?
Over the years, we've had quite a few different professional advisors, and it depends what we're doing at the time. So when I was building this building that I'm sat in now, which is the Moo Cafe, I needed somebody that had an experience in project management and actually in sort of engineering and building. So we worked with a gentleman called Robin. That was his forte. Then I was working with somebody that was more people-based, because the problems I was having myself were my communication style to the team. So I worked with somebody, Chris Lowe, his name was, who is now working with some of my team members, whereas I'm working with a gentleman called Elliot at the moment and his wife, Natalie. Natalie's more on the marketing side, and Elliot is challenging me with regards to the business, because he's been through a large company himself. And they've also exited that, not that we're planning to exit ours anytime soon, but it's a much, much bigger company than ours. So it's just looking at the gaps and filling those skill sets in within my own portfolio. And I don't think we ever stop learning. Robert currently works with John Aldroyd as a sort of a financial business angel, if you like. He's sort of helping him learn more about the figures, delving in, getting things where they need to be, and helping Robert with that. As long as the company's profitable, I'm quite happy to let Robert do that, because I'm better on the other side. So we're all always looking for the next new bit of knowledge, and just reading, listening to podcasts. I hope maybe this might actually help somebody else, but listening to other people's podcasts, reading books all the time, and getting out there and meeting and seeing other businesses. I know if anybody's interested in farm shops or the hospitality or pumpkins or whatever else it is we're doing at the time, you know, our door is always open for people. So, you know, just drop us an email. And if you want to come in, we're a very friendly industry and people have helped us a lot. And therefore, now we're very much making sure that we repay those favours, as we always have done, because we're not in competition with each other. We're all, we believe, stronger together. So anything we can do to help British agriculture or people within it is all great. We've even taken a Harper Adams student on for the first time this year, which is great, because obviously I went to uni and I kept thinking, they don't come, you know, there's no students from university coming and looking at farm shops that I can see. And this is, it's a big business now. We need to celebrate this as a proper career. And I think she's really enjoying it. So, and again, she's in marketing and it's a girl. But yeah, she's seeing a whole different side to marketing and running a business. So
if there's one, maybe two nuggets of information that you'd give to someone who's considering setting up a farm shop, setting up a cafe, some kind of diversification process, what would that nugget be?
First of all, I would get out there and look at other businesses first, because quite a few people think it's easy. You know, they see a farm, they see the money coming in, they don't realize how much money's going out. I'd do some serious financial stuff first and check what other companies are doing to make sure you have a full understanding. And bodies like the Farm Retail Association will be able to help with that. I'd go to one of their conferences. If you're looking at farm shops and cafes, I would definitely, before you even put your planning in, I would go to the Farm Retail Association annual conference, because they're great people there and they will tell you exactly how it is, warts and all. And if you were looking at doing a farm diversification outside, more like the pumpkins, the corn maize, the open farm type style, I'd go to the NAFAN one, which is the British one as well. And then there is an American one, which is NAFTMA, but I'd start with the British ones first. So I'd definitely go to the conferences and visit other businesses and ask them. And then I'd really look at yourself, the people you've got, as in you and your family maybe, or it could be your children, or it could be your parents, or whatever, if it's on a family farm situation, and ask yourself, reflect in the mirror, do I really enjoy this style of work and this industry? Do I enjoy serving people? Do I enjoy talking to people? Because you're dealing with customers, you're dealing with serving customers all day, every day. I've got two boys that looking at working in the industry eventually. One of them just says, it'd be great if it wasn't for customers. Oh my God. I'm like, well, maybe this industry is really not for you. Maybe you'd be better working within agriculture, but maybe business to business agriculture, you know. So you have to really look at that, because it is very difficult to deal with customers all day, every day, if you don't enjoy it. I happen to really enjoy it. I think it makes our life and our offering a lot richer for it. But if you just want to do it for the money, maybe even look at renting the buildings out and you just become the landlord, you know. So I'd have a moment of reflection of yourself, honestly. And then I'd also look at the conferences first before you jump in, because this is like my third child. So if you think about it as having another baby, it's that sort of needs that sort of, in fact, I think the children probably think it's my number one child. Comes first, second and third, then the dog and then the kids. That's what they'd say, but that's not true.
And if people do want to contact you for advice or just to find you, where can they find you on the internet?
The website is www.farmercopleys.co.uk, and my email address is heather@farmercopleys.co.uk, and reach me through that, or if they just want to go through info@farmercopleys.co.uk. And we're on Facebook, so if anybody wants to see what we're doing, we do videos all the time. They came about just as a habit from COVID, where we're having to communicate, watch Boris every day, and then I'm going out and communicating to the people. I never watch my videos, so I apologize. I've always got a cup of tea in my videos, which has become a bit of a marketing thing now. And that gives you a really good feel for a year in Farmer Copleys and all the different avenues that we have going off. And one other thing that you'll come across in our videos, if anybody watches them and everything we do, you haven't asked me this question, but I just want to impart this piece of information. One of the things we did about 2016, we decided within our business to work out what our values were. And it was all very good, you know, don't know, we want to, you know, be sustainable, we want to do this, we want to do that, et cetera, et cetera. But they were a bit too corporate, and we came up with our values. We spent a good day working it out, and we came up with friendly, cheeky, trusted, welcoming, and honest. So we just came up with those five words. And since we've done that piece of work, we hire by those values. If people don't meet that criteria, they don't get in. Every time we've gone against it, it's failed. Every time we do an event and it doesn't meet with that criteria and those values, it fails. So actually, if you're within your business already, finding out what your values are is a really, really challenging piece of work. It sounds easy, but it's not. And I get outside help for that as well. I'd say that's been quite instrumental in the success of our business over the last, well, since 2016. That's another little gem that I would like to share.
That's a really good gem. Yeah. Thanks very much for that. I think that's all the questions that I had for you. But okay. Thank you so, so much for sharing all of that. It's been really inspirational for me as well. And I hope for other people who listen to it as well. So thank you very much.
And if you'd like to come out to the farm, you're welcome anytime. I can sort you out with pumpkins, strawberries, sunflowers, hopefully.
Thanks.
Bees and anything else we've got going off. I'd love to see you in the flesh and show you what we're up to.
Oh, that would be lovely. I'll let you know. So where can people find you in the real world?
We're at Pontefract, just about 1 mile outside of Pontefract, 5 minutes off the M62 M1 crossroads. So we're quite easy. Postcode is Whiskey Foxtrot 75 Alpha Foxtrot. You can tell I go sailing, can't you? I use the phonetic.
I will see you there.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. The Future Farming Podcast will be back next month. If you would like support diversifying your business, you can sign up to personalised one-to-one advice through Ricardo's Future Farming Programme at ffrf.ricardo.com. This podcast is produced by Ricardo, edited by Woods Noble Video, and funded by DEFRA. Thank you for listening.